Thank you for being here today. Although the content of my presentation focuses on research and educational settings, the information actually does apply to community-based outpatient settings as well. I will discuss the challenges we face in measuring the effectiveness of our autism interventions when delivered in community-based settings, and discuss an outcome measurement approach called goal attainment scaling. And then finally, I'm going to demonstrate how we applied goal attainment scaling and address some of its untested assumptions and limitations within a randomized controlled study of teacher consultation. Okay. What led us to search for ways to measure intervention outcomes is the need for approaches to support community-based practitioners. In our case, those were classroom teachers. But we focus on schools because it is the single agency in the United States mandated to provide services. And schools face serious issues. There's a national shortage of special education teachers, and those teachers that are in the field often lack knowledge of evidence-based practices. One intervention approach that is well-suited for meeting the high needs of better-trained teachers and supported, better-trained supported teachers is consultation. By increasing the skills of teachers, we can serve a larger number of children more effectively. Research reviews indicate that consultation is effective, and many models of consultation have been studied, such as behavioral consultation, conjoint behavioral consultation, systems consultation, just to name a few. The challenge we face when conducting experimental research in autism is that often we need to evaluate outcomes that are individualized to each child or each person. That is, if we're working in an outpatient treatment program, a school, or most any community-based program, the treatment goals for each person are different. The intervention plans for each person are personalized to their needs. They're individualized. So how do we measure intervention outcomes when we're measuring different types of treatment goals? Children are starting at different baseline levels. Treatment progress may not be able to be measured by standardized norm reference tests, which is often what we see in autism research. Finally, if we want our measurement approaches to be able to be applied in non-research settings, then we need to consider the feasibility of the data collection procedures at the start. We need to ask if community-based programs have the resources to implement the data collection procedures, and feasibility and scalability need to be taken into account when designing our interventions for eventual community-based implementation. We found goal attainment scaling as a promising outcome measurement tool. It's well designed for measuring intervention plans that target essential skills for children with autism, such as communication skills, social skills, learning skills, or other independent or adaptive skills. Goal attainment scaling was developed more than 40 years ago for program evaluation purposes in a mental health setting. It was considered superior for its suitability for individual and group outcome analysis of highly diverse and individualized treatments. Goal attainment scaling differs from other outcome measurement approaches because of its utility in allowing assessment of personalized, multivariable, scaled descriptions of outcome targets that can be used for both process and outcome evaluation. Since its introduction, goal attainment scaling has been applied in a variety of other settings and populations, such as communication disorders, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and early intervention. It's a standard in school consultation research. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about how we create a goal attainment scale form. Prior to the onset of intervention, goals are identified and written onto what's called the goal attainment scale template. An individual may have a single goal or multiple goals. Weights can be assigned to each goal according to overall priority and relative priority to the other goals. To write the goal attainment scale, descriptors or benchmarks are developed for each of the criterion levels. The standard goal attainment scale measurement system is based on the 5-point response scale that you see over here on the right. -2 is your worst expected outcome, -1 less than expected outcome, 0 is your important code. That's where you expect the child to be or the person to be at the end of the intervention. +1 is more than expected, and +2 is your best expected outcome. After the goal attainment scale is generated, the intervention is provided, and the goal attainment scale can be used to monitor progress towards goal completion at specified time durations or at the end of the intervention. Okay, let's have somebody in the back try to read this one. But here's just an example of a GAS template that's been completed for a child with autism, and this child has three different goals. Obviously, there's too much to read, but I just wanted to illustrate how we laid out the goals, an example of what a total goal attainment scale template looked like for us. And you'll notice on the top going left to right, that's where we put those indicators. For determining final progress towards goal attainment, raw scores based on the goal attainment scale are calculated. Thus, if you're starting off where you would be at present levels of performance or baseline, that minus 2 level, the person would have a total raw score of minus 6. If they achieved all the goals at the expected level, which is that score of 0, then at the end of the intervention, they would have a total raw score of, or GAS score of 0. Because scores are assumed to be standardized, they can be converted into T-scores using a formula developed by its authors and compared across individuals. Now, here are some of the assumptions of goal attainment scaling that remain untested and require serious consideration. First, it's assumed that goal attainment scale scores can be compared across individuals. But what if it's found that the measuring sticks are actually unequal? For example, differences could be explained by other factors based on the quality of how well that goal attainment scale template was written in the first place. The intervals between each benchmark could be different. The measurability of the goal could be better for one group over another, or the degree of difficulty in the child meeting the goal could be in favor of one group or another. Second, converting goal attainment scale scores into an overall standard T-score is controversial. It's argued that the scores do not represent interval data and thus cannot be converted into standard scores. Still others argue the measure approximates a normal distribution and results based on assuming the data are ordinal or interval show negligible differences. So here are some suggestions. Before we describe how we began to address these assumptions in the slide before, we have some recommendations for creating goal attainment scales. First, it's important to consider training on how to write a goal attainment scale and consider the degree of difficulty, the equality of those intervals between each one of the benchmarks, and obviously, we want to have goals that are measurable and observable. Third, we need to have objective data that could be supplemented by parent ratings and teacher ratings. And then fourth, for experimental research, it would be important to have an independent evaluator who's unaware of group assignment. And finally, instead of using converted standard scores, it's recommended that raw scores be used for data analysis. Careful procedures should be in place to ensure that the benchmarks represent a hierarchy of skills. So if you're going from minus 2 to plus 2, we want to make sure that the skills are increasing or the prompts are decreasing. So next, I'm going to switch gears and discuss how the strategies we created to ensure that our measuring sticks were similar between groups. We applied the goal attainment scale methodology within a randomized controlled study of teacher consultation intervention that's called the Collaborative Model for Promoting Competence and Success, or COMPASS. Okay, first we adapted that standard 5-point scale to better reflect the nature of our intervention. We changed the negative 2 rating, which was that worst expected level outcome, to represent the child's present levels of performance. And this was done as suggested by Schlosser because I thought I had his name up there. Okay. Because autism is, for school-age kids, not really associated with regression, say like muscular dystrophy. And also our preliminary study of COMPASS indicated that children did not regress, even those children who were in that comparison control group. Oh, I know what happened somehow. Okay, something seems a little out of order. Let me just see. Okay, I think what happened was I was trying to reduce my slides and didn't have my printout. Okay. Okay, so addressing some of the limitations then. So to address those limitations, we created a protocol for developing the goal attainment scale and trained people on that. Next, we defined three features we felt should be standard across the scales: measurability, level of difficulty, and degree of equidistance. And then we had an independent rater code the goal attainment scales, not aware of what group the children were in, to compare those three dimensions. And then we conducted a t-test analysis between the groups on those dimensions. Okay. In our study at time one, this is just a brief overview, all participants received a baseline evaluation that consisted of an ADOS and an ADIR and standardized assessment measures, but also direct observation of skill levels of three IEP objectives that reflected a social skill, a communication skill, or a learning skill, and then we used a goal attainment scale to code those behaviors. Following the baseline evaluation, teachers were randomized into a control group or the experimental group, and the control group represented services as usual. I'll talk about the experimental group in the next slide. And then at the final evaluation at time two, educational progress was measured with the goal attainment scale, and direct observation was used in collecting that information. The experimental group received a 3-hour consultation at the start of the school year. Teachers were asked to update the child's IEP after the consultation, and teaching plans were developed for each one of those three skill areas. Then after the consultation, four teacher coaching sessions occurred about every 4 to 6 weeks for about 90 minutes. And GAS forms were created prior to that first coaching session, and then we reviewed those goal attainment scale forms with the teachers at that time. At the end of the school year, the final evaluation focused on goal attainment of the three IEP objectives for the experimental group and the three IEP objectives of that control group that we collected at the very start of the school year. So our hypothesis was that children whose teachers and parents participate and receive the consultation would demonstrate better goal attainment outcomes compared to the children who receive their usual program. And now we're back to Anthony's. That was that very detailed goal attainment sheet that you saw earlier. I'm not going to read these, but just give you sort of an overall gist of what the IEPs look like, the objectives. So his first one was that he would start and complete 2 to 3 minute work tasks daily without aggression. The second one was he would learn to imitate adult play activities for at least 5 actions with objects daily. And then the third one was that he would learn to make 10 different requests per day independently. Now, so those were the objectives that we identified with the teacher. Then after that, we put those and placed those within that goal attainment scale template, and we considered these progress descriptions in creating that template. So for example, we wanted to make sure that when we were looking at frequency, it was lowest for -2 and, of course, highest for +2. The frequency of prompts would decrease from -2 to +2. The form of the prompting would change as we would go across the goal attainment scale. Perhaps physical prompts were needed in the beginning or used, but eventually moved to visual cues or no supports at all, and the child would be able to completely perform the skill independently. The context of the skill changed from single structure context to varied or unstructured context. And then lastly, the people involved when the child was producing the skill, let's say a social skill, maybe it started with an adult but then ended with peers. So this was Anthony's last skill of making requests. And the circled area, I'm just going to briefly summarize this. But at baseline, he aggressed when he was wanting to make a request. And adult prompts and cues were used to elicit what he wanted. In other words, he had no independent requesting skills. Progress was written in such a way to ensure that the distance between each description was calibrated in reference to that zero level. So we wanted him to be able to do the skill at least 10 times. He was making progress if he was at least performing the skill 50% of that 10 times or 5 times. And then the +1 would be if he could do it 50% more than the zero level or 100% more at that +2 level compared to the zero level. Inter-rater reliability was conducted at baseline and final evaluation, and the results looked pretty good for that. Of course, we got, I think, better with coding these at the end because we had excellent inter-rater reliability. And then when we looked at our goal attainment scale change scores, these were those raw scores, and we subtracted the baseline raw gas score from the final raw gas score. And we saw a large effect size. Okay, that's great. I mean, we got really great results, but alternative explanations might be in place. First of all, the level of difficulty, maybe that was in favor of the experimental group, and it was easier for them to accomplish their skills. Maybe the intervals between the scales were not really equivalent and couldn't really be comparable. And if you look at the centimeters to inches, maybe a 10 for the experimental group is really 10 centimeters versus 10 inches, so it's not as much progress. Or the measurability of the objectives was poor and harder for the rater to really code the behaviors for the control group. So to check whether or not we were really comparing apples to apples, we operationalized these three features and then coded those for the goal attainment scales. We used a 3-point rating system, and measurability was determined by making sure each description included three features: the number of prompts, the criterion for success, and the observability of the skill. Difficulty was defined as the child's ability to perform the skill, described in present levels of performance relative to the goal. So if the child could not perform the skill at all with any people or any supports, obviously that would be a very difficult skill for the child to learn. Equidistance was how well each benchmark calibrated to that zero level. So 50% of the targeted skill for negative one or plus one, or 100% for plus two, for example. One thing we wanted to know was, well, maybe these three features pretty much represent the same construct. And when we looked at them in terms of an intercorrelation matrix, we didn't see any correlation between them. So we're tapping into different types of features within the goal attainment scale. We conducted the t-test analysis between the consultation and the control group and found no significant differences. Difficulty, however, you'll see was significant at the 0.06 level. So we did run an analysis of covariance, and there was no change in the overall outcomes. How am I doing? All right. Oh, 3 minutes. Okay. So in summary, goal attainment scale seems to be a good option for outcome measurement. When testing interventions on children with different baseline levels of performance, different outcome targets, and varied intervention plans. But checks on inter-rater reliability should be conducted for each study, and evaluation of the measurability of the objective, how equidistant those benchmarks are, and that level of difficulty should also be evaluated, and ideally prior to intervention implementation. We ended up doing this after the fact, and the next time we're going to be more proactive and do this and make sure that our measurement sticks are equal between the two. Also, the goal attainment scale coding itself, we would recommend be based on direct observation. When we first started to do this, we were doing it and asking teachers, and actually we're finding this right now, when we would ask teachers where do they think the child's performing, they would often rate the child higher than we would rate the child. And it's because they wouldn't recognize as much the prompting that they're doing, you know, the number of verbal prompts. And so so then we would always ask the teachers, well, where do you see the child at most consistently? And then we would say, well, we saw him today. And then we would talk about those differences. We also recommend that goal measurement be done using direct observation, again, sort of related to that last point, if possible. We're currently looking at the use of, well, videotaping and teacher-made tapes, and how reliable can we do the goal attainment scale from teacher-made tapes, from live observation. And right now it's looking pretty good. It's looking pretty reliable with that. And if we can show that teacher-made tapes are just as reliable as if when I go out into the classroom and make a tape, it's really going to help us with implementation research. And then also, finally, raw scores be used rather than standardized T-scores. Finally, this project is a group effort, and I want to acknowledge school administrators, teachers, and parents for participating. and my co-investigators, John McGrew and Nancy Dalrymple, as well as other team members and our funding source, NIMH. Thank you. Good. Okay. Any questions or comments? I'd like to know how many of you do in school-based research. Very few people.
Hi, could you go back to the slide that had Anthony's goal attainment scale on it?
Yeah. Please? The very busy one or that shortened one?
This
one?
That's a good one. Uh-huh. So you actually were only changing one aspect of the goal each time.
Actually, maybe I'm reading more into your question, but it's a good question because what we would do is write up the objective. So that's the one that's the one in the middle.
Right.
Okay. Then we would say, well, if he's making some kind of progress, maybe he'll do it 5 times, but maybe he'll do it with and he needs verbal cues. So where we have those parentheses is where it might vary.
Okay.
But we had to see at least one of those features in the negative one, plus one, or plus two to score that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I was trying to sort of, because I've used goal attainment, and I always find it difficult to write the goal.
Well, because the teachers, the child may be making progress. Maybe they're doing it 3 times, but they're doing it completely independently, you know. So we had to have those features that could vary, but still had to be incrementally higher than the previous description.
Right. So using your whether it was with adults or peers and the number of, you could vary one or more of those as it was incremental based on the.
On the zero, and on the zero level, it had to be more than that zero level.
Right.
That was really the clinchpin. Everything had to be, you know, that and the baseline level.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank
but
you.
I have, if anybody wants to contact me, we've written up a protocol on how to write these, and I have a pretty naive person who was working with us in the intervention, and she was really able to take IEPs and place them into the goal attainment scale form after maybe, 10 or 15 of them. So I was glad about that because she's not a researcher, you know, so that was good. Hello.
Interesting, Lisa. So I like the dimensions, the 5 dimensions that you use to scale from minus to positive 2. What would happen if we took each of those dimensions and scaled change on each of those dimensions and then used that as a more articulated or a better range or a bigger range of change?
Right.
Do you understand?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah. So if we took a level of prompting and broke that down a little bit more, the frequency of the skill... Yeah, I think the only challenge is that I think when you're working with teachers is that there has to be sort of an overall kind of flexibility in translation of it so that they really it makes sense to them and it aligns with the IEP. But yeah, I think that there's a lot more research and thought that needs to go into these goal attainment scales, because I think it is promising, but we do have many more questions, and that's one of them. That's a good question.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to know, I wasn't sure about how the teachers taking the data on the kids' progress, and how often do they take the data?
Okay. When we reviewed the goal attainment scale forms, we only reviewed it about every 4 to 6 weeks with the teacher. Now, data collection is a whole different matter. teachers would provide us samples of data, but we only collected the goal attainment scale score from a videotaped observation of the child performing the skill at that time.
So it was like more like probe data, like you took it every once a week or like on a video, or did you take
on the video? Okay. It was every 4 to 6 weeks. The teacher was keeping data in between time, but what we used for our study and what we collected and used for data analysis was only were the data that we collected during that observation through the videotape.
And so you didn't check like the teacher's reliability with the data?
Like, well, I have that.
No,
because that's a whole other matter. I mean, we didn't go in and say, teach, this is the actual data collection form you're going to use. We're going to actually, we have a web-based, intervention web is what it's called, system we're going to use next time where it's going to be more standardized with them. But we were allowing teachers to collect data however they normally collect it. And that's a whole other thing that I think needs to be talked about is, you know, who looks at data? How do they use data?
Right.
Do any administrators ever ask for data?
And so you help them determine what, like, the criterion was? Or
yeah, we established that at the initial consultation that we did when we developed the goal. And then during the coaching sessions, we did say to them, how are you collecting the data? Would you like help in figuring out a system on how to collect the data? I would say 50% of the teachers did want help with that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
The suggestion Paul just made, I thought was wonderful, both for the data, the numbers part of the quantitative analysis, but I also thought the point he was making might be extremely useful for children who are making very small and very slow progress. That by adding more measures of progress to a single objective, you have more data to work from a child who's changing in small ways, ways that are hard to see, and you also have multiple ways of assessing change. So I thought that was really promising. It might be particularly useful for children with very severe difficulties in learning rates.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, and I think that makes a lot of sense, because one thing we're starting to look at now are the other possible predictors of outcome beyond the consultation intervention. And I think autism severity might be one of those. And that might, and then for those, that tells us something different that we should do for those children. We also found that we're looking at the predictive correlations between coaching, the different coaching sessions and final outcome. And it's not until the last coaching session we see a relationship between outcome, which is when full fidelity is the best fidelity, when all the plans are implemented. But coaching two, which doesn't predict outcome, does predict coaching four. And so it would be interesting then to go back and look at coaching two, you know, because it's telling us we got to do something different for some of these teachers, and to see if, in fact, those also might represent teachers of students who might need, you know, smaller and more broken down goal attainment scales. Okay, thank you.